You're listening to Jet Set on Talk Radio, the official radio show of Hillsborough Community College, live from Newport City. And today we're going to be talking about a country called Morocco, which is on the continent of Africa.
You sound very enthused.
I'm tired.
Wake up, team. It's 9 a.m. in the morning.
It's 9 a.m. It's time for Jet Set. And
you know what time is? You know what time is in Africa right now?
2 in the morning.
Maybe
2 in the afternoon.
Yeah, 2 in the afternoon, I guess.
Guys, I'm killing it.
Can we get this fact-checked?
So you need to have, like, the energy.
The energy.
Yeah!
What's your favorite thing about Morocco, Megan?
Moroccan Independence Day. Which was yesterday.
Happy Morocco Day.
Happy Moroccan Independence Day.
I was going to say it's a fun word.
They won to the French.
They did it. They beat the French.
They beat the French.
That's what you want to hear.
That's always a good reason to celebrate. Almost as good as a reason to celebrate as beating the English.
No, my favorite thing about Morocco is probably the architecture. Honestly.
Okay. Oh, that's like an actual answer.
Yeah. Well, okay. What were you expecting?
Not like a joke answer.
Oh. I like this. I don't know.
You started with sk. I heard it.
No, I didn't even. I
feel like in general, it's one of the most magical countries that are in Africa.
Magical.
Like, yeah, I mean.
I agree.
I mean, like.
It's colorful.
Like in, like through the, like among all the countries in the continent, like I feel like it's the one that highlights the most. Somehow they have like a different energy, different to the other ones. So it's like attractive somehow. And so, yeah, we've been talking about, like, many countries in Europe, in South America, so that's why we're moving around more around the world.
Yeah, this is our first Africa country, I think.
Yeah, we wanted to get away from the Eastern Hemisphere, Western Hemisphere.
Well, we go back and forth.
Yeah, but we spent a lot of time over there and in Europe, and so you're like, it's time to go somewhere else. Megan, do you want to introduce this song for us that
we
have here?
Yes, so this is not... Unfortunately, I didn't get a Moroccan song, but I'm not sure if we're going to do Egypt. So this singer is from Egypt. This is Kalam Aynech by Shireen.
All right. See, well, after this song, we're talking about Moroccan history, film history.
And what to do in Morocco.
What to do. What was yours on?
Mine's a secret.
Oh, a secret from Megan Hughes. All right. Well, we'll figure that out later. See you guys in a minute.
Yeah.
Hi, welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Jet Set on Hawk Radio, the official radio station of Hillsborough Community College, live from Ybor City, and also occasionally in Morocco. We are going in between wormholes and interdimensional
rifts.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
To be simultaneously in Ybor, Tampa, while also in Morocco. And that's a very complicated way to say we're talking about Morocco today. And we're starting off with Moroccan history. And also, that was, I can't pronounce that. Whatever.
Kalam Aini by Shireen.
Yes.
That's my Kalam Aini.
Yes.
Okay. So, as you may have noticed, we are one person short today. We miss Annie so much ever since
she got pancaked by a semi.
Yeah.
She just got squished like
Oh, no.
She was completely flat. But
she's on vacation today. I don't know if she's listening, but if you are, hi Annie, we miss
Annie.
You and we are lost without you, but we're going to do your segment for you.
Yes, Annie still diligently provided us a very thorough history of the country of Morocco.
So what do you know about Morocco, because I know you're a history buff.
So it was living around, you know, northern France, and then I'd imagine in the Middle Ages it probably got absorbed into like the Muslim caliphates and stuff like that, and the Ottoman Empire, all that fun stuff. Then Ottoman Empire dies,
yep,
shrinks, and then Europe decides after you know, England kind of eats North America, Spain kind of eats South America, then there's a whole independence thing. Europe's like, well, what the heck, I still want colonies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to just live in my own home.
It's
I want to live in other people's homes. And so that's when they decided, you know, we tried the New World, but we could colonize the Old World. We could just colonize Africa below us.
I feel like a lot of people don't realize that a good majority of Africa does speak French, because when I tell people that I know a little bit of French, they're like, they associate it with France. They don't ever associate it with the colonies of France. Like,
yes.
If you think of Spanish, you usually think of South America. You don't think of just Europe.
Yeah, that's interesting how that
ended
up. But yeah, so France got a lot of northern Africa, I believe.
They got Morocco. And they didn't really get Egypt.
Didn't they have Egypt for a little bit? And then it did switch to Britain at one point, but I forget why.
They got Algeria as well.
Algeria,
they get
for
Algeria,
sure.
Yes.
Many countries. Actually.
A good portion of Algeria does speak French.
Yeah.
Oh, a good portion.
Sorry.
Of North Africa actually speak French. Like a weird combination of French and Arabic somehow.
Mm-hmm. And Berber. Yeah.
And then Germany got absolutely nothing in Africa.
That's true.
They got like two little things.
Wonder what Germany was up to.
And then that Germany was not upset about that at all, guys.
Yes. So Morocco does have two official languages.
Was I like right on the spot with that? Because that was
pretty cool. I mean, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right. Heck yeah, man. That history degree.
A lot of empires, a lot of dynasties, and then, you know, they are like, all right, let's form Morocco, and then the French are like, it's ours now. They show up. They implement a lot of governmental policies, very strict governmental policies, a lot of anti-Islam policies, and
shocking.
Then when they gained their independence, they kind of retconned all that.
They retconned it.
They retconned it.
That's a choice of word.
It was lost media. It was French rule was lost media. But yeah. It is, fun fact about Morocco, it is a kingdom. It has a king.
Still to this day. Wow.
It is one of three in Africa. The only kingdoms in Africa are Morocco, Lesotho, and Swaziland. I always mispronounce that. I always say Swaziland.
I remember the rumor of the Prince of Morocco hanging out with the Princess of Spain. That was so cute.
Really? That is cute.
Yeah. He had a necklace in Arabic saying "I love you." I was like,
"Aww."
but it was just a rumor. Unluckily.
But yeah, as we mentioned, in 1956, November 18th, because today is the 19th, Morocco gained independence from France, and that is why they don't celebrate Independence Day in the way that Americans do, for sure. But
Americans get a little funky with it.
Let's see.
1856?
No, 1956.
Oh, that makes more sense. I was thinking I didn't add up. Then I heard wrong, guys. I'm stupid.
1966.
That's pretty. How did? Was it just like a handover thing, or did was there like an armed revolution at all?
It was a bit of a revolution. It wasn't like a war.
Yeah, that makes more sense because that was kind of the end of the colonial era, and then a lot of the European powers like whatever, just go away.
Same with Britain. Yeah. I don't. You know, you'd think that they, with as much as they fought for other countries, it's surprising that they didn't want their African colonies that much. It kind of felt like a whatever loss to them, you know.
I think at that point, and like talking about
mid 20th century.
Yeah, at that point, colonization was going a bit out of fashion in the European mindset, and so there wasn't as much of a. It was very hard to justify on a global scale in UN to say like, oh, we're trying really hard to rule this other nation. And so that's not the only reason why. There's other reasons, but it was going out of fashion, which is silly. That's
the same can be said for the UK as well, because, you know, they had what country was it? They had South Africa, right?
Yeah.
That was the big one.
Mm-hmm. And I'm also looking here. They had Nigeria, Egypt,
Guinea as well.
Uganda.
Oh, wow, that's like all of North Africa almost.
Oh, yeah, they had a ton, especially on the western coast. Spain and a little bit. And then...
Always surprises me.
I mean, you have two Spanish cities that are at the north of Morocco that still being Spanish cities.
Mm-hmm.
Ceuta and Melilla.
Yeah, you can see right here, very tip is Spanish Morocco, which makes sense because they are literally touching tips there.
Unless I wonder why they don't build up like a bridge connecting them. It's like, no.
It's also worth mentioning that the Belge speak French, which also contributes to more of Africa speaking French.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. And also the Belgians.
Italian, really?
Shockingly evil. Yeah, that's why you want a little World War II lesson. Italy, they had some holdings in Africa. And particularly, they really had their eyes on Ethiopia because Italy wanted to be taken seriously in the 1900s because they did a little thing called fascism. Mm-hmm. And Mussolini, he wanted to recreate the Roman Empire, and he wanted to basically expand his colonial holdings as the European powers try to do. And he invaded Ethiopia, and Ethiopia kicked their little butts so badly, Mussolini had to go run to Hitler and say, help me, I'm getting my butt kicked in Ethiopia.
That's a weird way to be taken seriously.
Yeah, they didn't do it well.
I feel like that's a lot of the Axis powers.
And then, as we mentioned, Britain had Egypt, and Italy tried to war with Britain on the Egyptian soil, and they got their butt kicks, and Hitler, and then Mussolini again had to run to go, Hitler, help me, help me. And then so after that point, Hitler basically took over all the African side conflict, and Italy just sat and nursed their wounds like a bunch of babies. I can say this because I am Italian, guys. And also they were fascist.
Does this say Libya is under?
Italy, yeah. But
how'd they manage that?
Not well.
With Germany?
This map is from the late 1800s.
Oh, okay.
So they didn't handle that too well. I think there was a bit of a move for independence in the late 1800s.
All right.
But anyways,
I'm going to do Annie some justice and rapid fire through some of her fun facts. So the national dish is couscous.
Haven't we mentioned that dish before?
I think so.
I never tried that before.
Probably with France.
What is it?
Or Germany.
What's in it? What's it made of?
Let's see. What is couscous?
It says it's a North African dish. Maybe I'm wrong. But it's semolina granulus. So it's like kind of like a rice almost. Mm-hmm. I like semolina. They make good semolina pudding.
Okay.
Semola, interesting.
Go try some of that, guys.
Marrakech is often called the Red City due to its red sandstone buildings.
Marrakesh.
Moroccans are passionate about football. making it the country's favorite sport.
I mean, that isn't shocking for like any country outside of America.
Just, no,
I mean, you just need to think about like how professional football clubs in Spain and France, most of their players come from Morocco nowadays.
Yes,
they do.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Annie wrote, Morocco is a popular filming location due to its unique scenery, which we will talk about more later.
Annie, you're stepping on my toes. That's mm-hmm. my segment.
The cultural richness of Morocco is one of its most attractive features. With influences from Arab, Berber, European, and African civilizations, Moroccan culture offers an incredibly diverse mix that can be observed in its language, architecture, music, and traditions. The population is approximately 37.6 million people.
It's a lot.
That doesn't seem like a lot.
I can't read. I just learned I can't read in the
I mean, just
of
think
this.
About like its greatest city is just 3.7 million people. So like, what are all those 30 million?
It's Tangier, right? That's their biggest city.
No, their biggest city is Casablanca.
Oh, like the foreshadowing movie. For later.
And then the capital is Rabat, and then I would say Fez and Marrakesh are like the most important cities.
Right. Well, is that all for our little?
That's all for any segment.
And
I hope I did a little bit of justice.
We just need to highlight one point. It's just one of the three only countries in Africa with a McDonald's.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
If you want a Big Mac, go to Morocco.
Exactly.
Well, guys, listen up. What we're doing here, we're really putting our lives on the line, and I just want to remind you guys to please thank us for all that we do, because our next song is a grim reminder of mortality. It's called The Jet Set Life Is Gonna Kill You.
And Annie got her information from National Geographic Kids.
Thank you, Megan Hughes. The next song, the next song is called The Jet Set Life Is Gonna Kill You, because guys, we could end up dead. We could end up.
This is true. They wrote this about us.
Crash,
actually.
And no. By the end of the semester, the jet set life is gonna kill us. All right, we'll see. This has also been My Chemical Romance. See you guys later. Hello, everybody. Welcome back.
You're listening to Jet Set on Hawk Radio.
Okay, Megan, dang.
What did I say? The official radio of Hillsborough Community College live from Ybor City, and we're still talking about Morocco.
And that was The Jet Set Life is Gonna Kill You by My Chemical Romance, and yes, it will. Anyways, so now Morocco movies, Morocco film. Going a bit off, I'm not doing like a single movie for this one as I normally do, because instead I'm going to talk about all the movies that are filmed in Morocco. Because
every single one.
Every single movie ever made goes to Morocco,
mm-hmm.
not Hollywood. Little known fact.
Interesting.
And so I think, and also, I mean, if you think Moroccan film, I think the number one thing is Casablanca, which we mentioned earlier. And unsurprisingly, that movie was filmed nowhere near Casablanca in Morocco. It was filmed entirely on stages in Hollywood. But you got to shout it out. It's a very fun film. It's a World War II movie, speaking of what we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's a movie about a guy, an expatriate living in Morocco, who has to choose between his love for a woman and or helping her and her husband escape Morocco and get to the States. It's an interesting movie made that in the fact that it was made in 1942 before the war was over, so no one really knew how the war was going to go at this point.
That's
and
true.
So it has much more of that uneasiness to it than other World War II movies do. But it's still firm in its, you know, hatred for the Germans, and a lot of the people that were in the movie were actually Nazi refugees, or not refugees from Nazis. So it was a very personal movie for them. So a lot of them were Jewish, obviously, so very personal movie to them. And one interesting fun fact before I go off Casablanca and onto other general Moroccan stuff. There's one scene in an airport, which they cannot film in an airport at night because of war reasons. IMDb did not give me a reason as to why, but there was a security measure not to film at night during the war. And so they filmed it on a sound stage with a cardboard cutout plane that looked real, but it was just cardboard.
Wow.
And they used little people to make it look taller. So they're all really short, and so the plane looked really big, and then they used a little bit of perspective trickery, and that's how they made the airport look like a massive full-size plane, but it was really just a soundstage.
Is it an airport or an airplane?
There was an airplane at an airport.
Oh.
There tend to be those at airports, Megan.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that was also
Are you addressing me by my full name this whole time?
It's funny.
I don't think you've said Megan.
It's funny. I don't know. Some people just have last names that just ring. Anyways.
I've never seen Casablanca. That's my singular fault.
It's interesting in that no one really expected it to become like... It's the most famous film ever, or one of the most famous films ever made. But when they were making it, like, it was an A-list movie, but like no one really expected it to get Best Picture,
mm-hmm.
or even become like a super famous thing. And that's also kind of the reception I have with it, where it's like, it's a good movie. You know? It's fine. It's very good at what it is. Anyways, that same force perspective trick with the airplane, they reused that in Alien by Ridley Scott, the movie with the alien. And when they were finding the alien ship, and they're finding the what's called the space jockey, the dead alien on the ship, they used little people, including Ridley Scott's son as well, to make it look taller when really it was small.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Anyways, that's just a little bit of film trickery. Going on to Morocco specifically, because Casablanca is about Morocco, but not in Morocco. Films that were actually shot there were Lawrence of Arabia, which makes a lot of sense. And that is a gorgeous film. Please watch that movie if you can. That one's so cool. The Mummy, Gladiator. Even
The Mummy was filmed
there? It was The Mummy. It was The Mummy.
I didn't realize I was with a bunch of mummy cells. Megan Hughes, last week you told me that mummies aren't scary, and now you're all excited like, oh, The Mummy was filmed in Morocco.
Okay, well, first of all, I assumed it was sets. And secondly, yeah, mummies aren't really that scary to me.
The mummies are scary, but that's not here or there. Mummies have bandages, and that freaks me out. But Game of Thrones as well shot a little bit here, which is interesting. I have not watched Game of Thrones. I always assume that with very like cold climate, and so I'm not sure what they're doing in Morocco, but they were there. I know Tangier is a very famous spot for a lot of movies to show. I believe, yeah, Alfred Hitchcock, they started shooting there with The Man Who Knew Too Much, and that kind of opened up Hollywood's eyes to like, oh, this is a pretty good filming location. And I know I was just looking at pictures of Tangier, the city, and it's like, yeah, I've seen that before. Like, just in movies. Like, I know that skyline. Like, I've seen that place before, and I hadn't even realized, you know, what it was called.
You said a lot of movies were filmed in Morocco. I didn't expect it to be, like, such big-name budget shows and films.
I think also because a lot of big-budget movies have the budget to go to Morocco.
Yeah.
It's not really a cheap place. Like, if you're on a budget, you go to Bulgaria, but if you got like, a good budget, you go to Morocco.
Why would you go to Bulgaria?
For some reason, it's really cheap to film in Bulgaria. I don't know why. The new Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie was filmed in Bulgaria. Not a lick of it was filmed in Texas, which is really funny.
Wow.
What about Indiana Jones?
Actually, I don't see Indiana Jones on this list that I'm looking at, which is surprising because it would make sense.
Maybe Egypt or Algeria.
Well, Indiana Jones is more Middle East than North African.
Last one, like the one that's, I think, last year, I mean, they were supposed to have like some scenes in Morocco. But I don't know if it was Morocco.
It might have, because this article I'm looking at, which, by the way, I am looking at an article from journeybeyondtravel.com. And actually, no, this was made after that movie came out, so I guess not. That might have been a film set, or maybe they were shooting somewhere else and said this is Morocco, which people also do a lot.
Probably.
Is this the 2023 Indiana Jones film?
Yes.
Was filmed in Fez, Morocco.
Oh, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Anyways, there's one other thing that I have some beef with, because it mentioned that the Torit Kasba was a backdrop for a scene in Star Wars. Now, I have looked that up, because I've watched, more than I'd like to admit, I have watched Star Wars quite a bit in my life, and I looked at photos of this place, and it's very beautiful. I can't remember seeing this at all in Star Wars, and I've looked up and down over the internet.
Which Star Wars? The first one?
It doesn't say. It just says a Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Which place exactly?
The Torirt Kasba. And so I've looked up on other websites, and they also say the exact same thing. They said the Kasba was used in a scene in Star Wars as a backdrop. And I think they're all referencing this article, maybe, but I can't find what scene. And I'm going through my rather extensive history of like the scenes in Star Wars, and I can't imagine.
I've seen Star Wars, of course, bits and pieces, but I've never sat down like I'm going to watch Star Wars.
Most of it was filmed in the first one, the original. Most of that was filmed in Tunisia, which makes sense because a lot of desert. But I can't think of a single.
I was going to say the Sahara could work too, but it's just like miserable out there.
They filmed. They filmed in the Sahara in Tunisia.
In Tunisia.
Yeah, and there's still some film locations up that you can visit, which is cool.
It's probably better in the cooler, dry climate
The Steve. That I'm getting off topic from Morocco, but George Lucas was so miserable filming on location.
I found it.
One second, in the extreme heat in the Sahara, and then in the extreme cold in the mountains for the next movie. That's why all the new Star Wars films were filmed completely on a set in a green screen. You can see he was so miserable and he got lazy.
That's a really funny fact.
But what did you find, Camilo?
So according to Secrets of Marrakesh, in Star Wars, exactly like the scenes were trying to make like Tatooine, if you are familiar with it.
Yes.
Look at their desert. They are shoot in the city of, I don't know what was it. What's the city?
Was it Fez?
No, it's Owar Sassate.
Yeah, but I still can't think of that in my head. I know all those scenes. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'll take their word for it, but I'm having trouble like really confirming that.
I look at the picture and it's like, yeah, it's a desert.
Yeah, but is it a picture from the movie?
For me, what I remember to the movie, because I've watched them, like all of them, it really looked like.
It does look like it. I can't find any exact confirmation, and so I wasn't entirely sure, but I will take their word for it. It's in Star Wars somewhere.
There are many links about it. I mean, who knows if it's like really valid or not, but yeah, probably.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, they probably did film there. I was just having trouble finding it. I wanted to make sure I wasn't, you know,
I think
giving
it was
fake news on there.
Some of the houses, and I say this as someone who's not seen Star Wars ever since I was a kid, and I don't know any of the plot, and I know I'm going to get eaten alive for saying that.
True.
Like, here, look at this photo.
Okay, that
makes
sense.
Like the house.
That was Tunisia, though.
Is that?
That's what I thought, but I don't know. I'm not like a huge Star Wars nerd.
It
but But anyways, point is, it's probably there. I just couldn't find exact confirmation. Anyways, a few more things that were filmed in Morocco. Mission Impossible was filmed there. Two James Bond movies, which I couldn't tell you which two because there's like 20. But there's a lot. And, yeah, I think that, I mean, really, it's like a lot. The Jewel of the Nile, it's another one. Black Hawk Down. And then, of course, for actual film studios in Morocco, you have the Atlas Film Studio that is located in Cunden. Excuse me, my bad. That is not where it is. It's located in Orzazat. Anyways, that's all for me.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, so...
Is it, like, cheaper to film there either? Or is it just...
In Morocco?
Is it just the scenery, like...
I'm pretty sure it's just the scenery. I can't imagine it's that cheap to film there. It's definitely cheap to film in Tunisia because it's a desert. But I'm not sure exactly. But I think it's just the scenery that drives people there. I will say this just from like context clues. I'm seeing a lot of bigger budget movies on that list.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine it's probably a little bit more expensive to film in Tangier and other
especially
places.
on the World Heritage sites too.
Yeah.
Like you said they had them in the backdrop, so
yeah,
I imagine that's a bit more.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, and because some of these are like really famous pieces of architecture that are being used, so that's also gonna put your budget up.
Yeah. Well, go watch all those movies, every single one.
One of them. And while you're doing that, we have Beginning of the End from Spine Shank, because nothing makes me think of Morocco more than the Freddy versus Jason soundtrack.
Really?
All right, guys, we'll see you guys in a minute.
Welcome back. You're listening to Jet Set on Hawk Radio, the official radio of Hillsborough Community College, live from Ybor City and now Fez, Morocco, because we are going to be taking a bit of a detour. We talked about the history a little bit, some fun facts. We talked about movies.
True.
And now I'm going to talk about something that hopefully you won't find boring. We're going to be talking about the oldest university in the entire dang world.
That's an interesting topic.
Technically
choice.
Not the oldest, but the oldest currently operating university.
When was it founded?
857 AD.
Oh my goodness gracious.
So it's been around for a dang long
sense.
Time.
That makes sense, though, because the Middle East, they were doing math and stuff more than Europeans were doing.
For sure. So we are talking about the University of Al-Qarawiyyin. Originally was founded as a mosque and established in 857 AD, making it the oldest continually operating university in the entire dang world. Nowadays, the school provides an emphasis on teaching Islamic religious and legal sciences, as well as classical Arabic grammar, linguistics, and reading. So there's definitely a bit more on the science, math, reading, literature side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Their mission is stated on their website is to empower individuals to embrace the core of Islam through a transformative educational experience that is firmly grounded in tradition. Through comprehensive study of the Arabic language and Islamic sciences, we aim to make original texts, cultural nuances, and spiritual depth accessible to all. And that information is from their website at alqarawiyyinuniversity.org. If you can figure out how to spell that, then you can go check it out. So, to talk about the way that this was founded, you're going to need a little bit more historical context. And this goes back to talking about the sort of after the, or I'm going to eat my own words here because I don't know that much about the Ottoman Empire. But this was during
that can help.
A dynasty. When was the Ottoman Empire?
Like the late 1400s to like.
Okay, this is way before that. We're going way before that. This is during the Idrisid dynasty, which was from 808 to 927 AD. So
yes.
For a short while, they were ruled by Idrisi, was his name.
Idrisi? I don't know. I'm just guessing. I'm not that familiar with them.
It was parts of modern-day Morocco and Algeria, but mostly occupied Morocco. Fez, the city of Fez, served as the capital before Hajar al-Nasar, a fortress, was built and took the role of being the capital. And this was during the Idrisid dynasty that a daughter of a wealthy Tunisian merchant named Fatima al-Fihri founded the mosque. And her sister, Mariam al-Fihri, also founded another mosque, but only one of them ended up becoming the university. Now, here's where it gets tricky, because a lot of historians tend to discredit this, saying that it was perhaps too convenient that two sisters from the same family both founded very culturally important mosques. Though this is traced back to very reliable firsthand sources. So it does beg the question if that is actually coming from a genuine concern or if this is just sort of like a misogynistic, like two women couldn't have founded
maybe
mosques.
It could be both.
The Al-Fihri family had migrated to modern-day Morocco from Kairouan, Tunisia, which is why the mosque is called Al-Qarawiyyin. Very similar.
Wow.
The other mosque that her sister founded was Al-Andalusiyyin Mosque. It was in the same year, supposedly. That one stayed a mosque, did not become a university. Another fun fact is that as this was sort of integrating into a university, from mosque to university, offering educational teaches as well as Islamic teaches, famous cartographer Muhammad al-Idrisi, whose maps were used by European exploration during the Renaissance, is said to have resided in Fez and actually studied at the mosque. So that's something to know. In 1947, we're jumping ahead just a little tiny bit. Al-Qarawiyyin, yeah, just a little bit. Al-Qarawiyyin became a part of Morocco's state educational system. This is under the time of French rule. And at first, only women were admitted to study. I looked this up. I tried to find more sources on that or what exactly that meant, but I could not find anything. In 1963, after Morocco gained its independence from the French, which ties back to our Moroccan Independence Day, the royal decree of Morocco's king says the mosque is officially registered as a university under the Ministry of Education. But it wasn't until 1988 that the school was actually allowed to resume Islamic teachings, which is surprisingly recent. That was by decree of King Hassan II. So, if you're ever in Morocco, be sure to visit Al-Qarawiyyin University. It is spelled different ways. Sound it out, methinks. And I did get that from their official website as well as the Al-Qarawiyyin Wikipedia.
All right. That makes sense because most university, like the old ones, like the whole university system started out of churches and religion because they're the only people learning how to read and write because you got to read the Bible or the Quran. And so that's how if you were noble and you wanted your kid to know how to read, send them to the church.
I mean, it was founded by a very wealthy family.
Exactly. And then that's how pretty much any in Europe or the Middle East was definitely beat out Europe by a few hundred centuries. But that's how it started out, was people going, sending their kids off to monasteries or churches. And then, you know, from there on, they become universities. And as well, one thing people don't realize as well, how important the Islamic countries in North Africa and the Middle East were to European education as well. A lot of the foundations
for geography, math, sciences, reading.
But also, I mean, more like a direct, especially during the Crusades, because that was a direct, even if it was through war, there was like a few hundred years where Europe was directly neighbors with the Middle East because they settled up countries there. And a lot of trading of knowledge and culture went back and forth from Europe to the Middle East there. And as well when Spain was under Islamic control for a couple hundred years, a lot of Arabic knowledge seeped into Europe through that originated in those universities, then seeped up into Europe as well. And a lot of the very early textbooks
very common algebra and math that's still used today,
and also like theology and other things you wouldn't
philosophy.
Yeah, all of that. A lot of those early university textbooks, those were translations of Arabic text and stuff like that, so it had a very big
I think a lot of people discredit that.
Oh yeah,
unfortunately.
I was a big medieval history nerd.
I have a question.
Yes.
So taking on some stereotypes about like the Islamic world, did the university admit women students or just men students?
No, it was women students too. In the same year that the university became a public, it was 1947 when the university became a state controlled university, that same decade women were admitted into the school, and according to some resources, women were admitted first over other students, which is kind of a shocker to me, but I honestly can't confirm
even
that.
Back in the 800s they were allowing women.
Yes, they were allowed. Well, women were allowed to go into the mosque and listen but not be technically enrolled.
That makes sense.
That's what I look
that up. Sounds about right for that time period.
Like they admit men students, but like not technically women students. Like they could be there, but
women were allowed to sort of attend the sessions and listen in, but you know they weren't allowed to engage or
in a different. They were like in a mosque. They're in a different room. I guess so.
Or they were the same room, but like they were like there listening to what they
they're kind of like the
they're not officially enrolled. It's kind of like imagine like someone came into our classroom and they were just sitting there, but they're not enrolled in HCC.
Yeah.
they're getting the same education, but they're not technically an HCC student.
I know someone who does that.
Yeah.
okay.
So yeah, that's really fascinating.
Really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, so
if you're ever there, go see it. It is. Like, if you look up images of it, it is beautiful, stunning architecture.
In which city is it?
Fez.
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 Mm-hmm. No, but I'm in Fez. I don't just want to get educated, Camilo. I want to know where to find some fun things to do.
I want
to
wear a
in
Fez.
Morocco.
You're gonna listen to that. I have like all the itinerary for a funny vacation in Morocco when you're ready. But first.
We got like. First. Do you want to play your song still?
Of course.
Yeah.
All right.
Of course.
Introduce it.
So, how do I do this? When I thought about Morocco, it's part of the Arab world. So I wanted to include a song that is actually a mix of Spanish, well, Colombian Spanish for being exactly, and Arabic as well. Because I just listened to the song and it just transported me to those magical locations. So that's why we are here with Shakira with Ojos de Si.
All right. We'll see you guys in a bit. Welcome back. You're listening to Jet Set and Hawk Radio, the official radio station of Hillsborough Community College, live from Ybor City. Camilo, you're up.
So, Morocco. Morocco, guys.
We're going to speed run what to do in Morocco.
I mean, this is actually really brief. Like, as we said, Morocco has, like, different landscapes to watch out, to appreciate the nature of it. So I got this information from getyourguide.com. Because there are simple activities that are just to appreciate the beauty of Morocco. You can make, like, balloon flights over the Sahara Desert. You can go to Marrakech, just $100. It's, like,
see all the cool mountains of spice.
As many other countries with deserts, you can make rides with camels or quad bikes. And the best location will be the Aga Fye Desert, riding camels. Have you ever ridden a camel?
No. I have ridden a camel. That's you cute. Can actually, they used to do those at Lowry Park Zoo, which is now Tampa Zoo.
And there's another place. It's called Osoud Waterfalls to make hike and boat trips. And yeah, so there are like two places that I feel like there are like the most highlighting in Morocco. First one is in Casablanca, which is the Hassan II Mosque, which is the second largest functioning mosque in Africa and the 14th largest mosque in the world.
Wow.
It is recognized by its beautiful mosaics and mukarnas, which are like a type of design that are put on the ceilings for, and it's really like Islamic identified. And there's another place as well, which is Medina of Marrakech, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It's a labyrinth of streets, places, palaces, markets, and mosques, where you can watch all the women doing henna tattoos, snake charmers, street fours, bazaars, and many of the artisan things that you can find there. Basically, it's a marketplace, but like an aesthetic marketplace.
Heck yeah.
And that's it.
That's it. All
right,
okay.
Right on.
Visit Fez. Visit. They have so many mosques. Visit all the mosques. And
go watch those movies.
And go watch. Yes.
Of course. Right, bring sunscreen. Is that this?
Definitely. If you're white, bring sunscreen. You're gonna need it. Anyways, this was Jet Set on Hawk Radio. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next week with Undetermined Country Yet.
And see you guys.
See you guys then.
Well, maybe we'll stay now.
See you guys then.
Good morning and welcome to your favorite variety news show, giving you the latest and, in our opinion, the greatest news for your eardrums. I'm one of your co-hosts, Anthony, and with me today,
Vince Vibes, giving you daily rap.
Dustin with Drama Digest.
Steven with Football Focus.
And throwing it back to me with Showbiz Spotlight. But first, how are you guys doing today?
Awesome. Pretty good. You know, today is a special day for my girlfriend. It is her 20th birthday.
Good job. Happy birthday for her.
Happy, happy birthday. So, Beverly, if you're listening to this now, I love you and happy birthday. And hope you're having a good day so far. And there are gifts on the way.
Ooh.
What you get me?
Is it bigger than a bread box?
Yes, I would say so.
Ah, exciting.
But, so this day is going pretty well for me, and hopefully the rest of the week goes pretty well. And
how about you, gentlemen over on the other side?
No complaints over here.
Same here.